As GenAI reshapes industries, understanding and leveraging its capabilities is no longer an option, it's a necessity. And that's exactly why at Hatchworks, we developed our GenAI Innovation Workshop. In this workshop, we immerse you into a full day of learning, hands-on ideation, and building. We hit foundational concepts and show you how they relate to your domain. Then we develop actual use cases for your business and your industry. And we even build a custom GPT based on the use cases we define. Check out the link in the show notes or visit Hatchworks.com to get started today. Welcome to Built Right, a podcast by Hatchworks where we help you learn how to build the right digital product the right way. In this season, we're going all in on generative AI with guests ranging from international AI speakers, founders of GenAI products, experts in specific domains of GenAI, and leaders across industries. We're here to help you figure out how to take advantage of this new emerging technology so you can win in the market. So whether you're an AI techie or just AI curious, we got you covered. Let's get into it. Welcome, Built Right listeners. Get ready because our guest, Isar Matas, is bringing the heat today with four laws for success in the AI era. And we're going to go through these in detail today. And by the way, you're going to want to stick around because the last one is my favorite, so don't miss that. Isar is an AI implementation expert, four-time CEO, keynote speaker, serial entrepreneur, and even a former F-16 pilot to boot. And he's also the host of Leveraging AI podcast. Make sure you check out episode 56, where I joined Isar on the podcast going deep into custom GPTs. But welcome to the show, Isar.
Thank you so much. You know, after this kind of intro, I can only disappoint your listeners. It would be hard.
I should have started with a lower bar, shouldn't I?
I appreciate you.
Yeah, no, this is great. I'm really excited about this one today because we're going to get into the tactical pieces, really kind of the approach with AI. But before we jump into it, I got to ask you, man, what was it like? What was your experience as an F-16 pilot and anything you learned from that experience that's kind of translated to business?
Wow, it's an awesome question. So first of all, I had a blast, right? It's one of those things that in real time, as you're doing them, you're like, I'm so lucky. It was really, really amazing. But yes, a lot of things translate from being a fighter pilot to the business world and to entrepreneurship. And I've actually done a few episodes, mostly guests of different podcasts through the last, I don't know how many years, talking about this. But the main things is, you know, preparation is one on how to prepare for things. This could be anything, right? It could be preparing for a mission, but it could be preparing for a talk or preparing for a project and so on. So preparation is a big one. Teamwork of working with other people, both, again, on the preparation and execution. Sticking to the mission, even when things are tough, and not giving up and just finding ways to resolve and achieve the outcome that you wanted to achieve, regardless of obstacles that you see along the way. Being able to, on one hand, be very detailed with your planning and execution according to the planning, but at the same time, know how to pivot very quickly when things change and know how to respond. So there's really a lot of things that translate from being a fighter pilot or probably anything military, like active fighting military to like the business world.
Yeah, I think that explains a lot of your success you've had later on. Are you still a pilot today? Do you still fly?
No. I have a private license, which I very barely use, meaning it's not current. So I get to fly with friends who have jets and stuff like that, but not on my own.
Nice. That's awesome. All right. So let's not beat around the bush anymore. Let's get directly into the good stuff. So we have these four laws for success in the AI era. And what Isar is actually going to do is bring up a visual for us to walk through it. And don't worry, those listening on the podcast, we will be very descriptive in what we're talking about. But I'm going to hand it over to you and we're going to kind of go back and forth and give the audience a little bit of insight into these four laws for success in the AI era.
Awesome. Let's do it. So I came up with these. I do several different things right now in addition to the Leveraging AI podcast, and a lot of it is consulting to different businesses. So I get to see the pre-implementation, during implementation, and post-implementation of AI in various different companies, in different industries, in different sizes of companies, and so on. And these evolved through that process of looking at the AI thinking more than anything else. Like, how do you
Mm-hmm.
think about AI in order to really gain the most benefits out of it? So let's get started with the first one.
I think
And
that point though, right there is such a big thing, because this is one of those transformations that you almost got to break the current line of thinking. It's like coming out of the matrix to a certain extent, because it's so transformative in a way.
yeah, 100%. It's not like anything else we've seen before. Like, I'm old enough, as you can tell, those of you who are watching this, with the lack of hair that I have and the gray hair that I still have, is that I've seen the dot-com rise and collapse in like 99 and 2000, and I've seen the house, market rise and collapse, and now this, and it's very, very different. And maybe we touch on that first, on why I think it's so different and why I think people should think differently. And it's very different from two major aspects. Aspect number one is, how broad is it? Right? It really touches almost anything we do, and definitely everything we do in a business that is not manufacturing anything. Right. And even then, in manufacturing, there's a lot of AI stuff on both the manufacturing itself and the design process and the product design process and predictive maintenance. Like, there's a lot of AI stuff in production as well. But it really touches almost everything we do in business. So that's number one. And number two is speed. If you even think, and I love giving that example, like I said, I've been through the dot-com thing when the internet showed up. And I remember the first time I connected to the internet, because it was the biggest anticlimax of my life. My roommate at the time, we were 21, I'm guessing, 20 and change. And he comes one afternoon to our apartment. He's like, "Listen, I bought us a modem." And I go, "What the fuck is a modem?" He's like, "Oh,
The
it's
hell's a
this
modem?
thing. It's this thing. It's going to connect us to the internet." Like, "What's an internet?" It's like, "Oh, it's, I don't exactly know, but it's going to be awesome." And we're like, "Okay." So we open the box and we unwrap it. And there's obviously, you can't search on YouTube how to do it, because it's not YouTube. We actually read the manual. We connect the wires, and we connect it to the phone line, and we connect to the thing, and we install the software with the CD, and we do everything as it says. And it goes for a while. And then there's a prompt, like those of you who remember DOS, like a little triangle symbol thing to put in something, and we didn't have a clue what to do then. And that was the first time I connected to the internet. And that was 94. The
I
first
wasn't
time I
quite in
had.
college, but I remember getting chewed out by my parents because you couldn't be on the phone and the internet at the same time, right? So
He was
I
using
was kind of
the
at that
phone line.
stage. Yeah.
So that was 94. The first time I opened my first email address was in 99.
Yeah.
So 5 years has passed from the first time I connected to the internet to the first time I had an email address. Forget about all the stuff that we're doing today with e-commerce and watching satellites in real time, and communication and video conference, like email. 5 years. So, as fast and incredible as the internet, change, transformation happened, it happened really slow. It gave
Yeah.
us a lot of time to adapt. This thing is as fast as an F-16, going back to my experience. It's
That's right. Yeah.
changing on daily basis. There's new capabilities that did not exist before. And businesses cannot operate on daily basis unless they adapt the way they're thinking. So I know this was a very long intro, but I think it explains why this one is so different.
And just to stick on that point, I don't know your take here, but I've thought about this exact same scenario, comparing it to other things like internet mobile. And it's like, oh my God, it's moving so much faster. But I wonder if it's actually moving so much faster, or if the endpoint that we're going to get is just so much bigger that this truly is, if you put it on a timeline, it's still at the same spot. But where we get is just going to be so insane. We can't even really comprehend it yet. I think it's one of the two. It's either way faster, or in the long-term timeline, it's just going to blow everything away.
I think it's both.
A little bit of
I
both,
think it's
yeah.
birth. Listen, I think the whole idea behind, AGI, super intelligence, and even before that, Because everybody, okay, you know, the holy grail is AGI or superintelligence. And for those of you who are listening and not sure what that is, AGI is artificial general intelligence, which is basically an AI agent that will be able to do everything a human does from a cognitive perspective at or above human level. And superintelligence is do everything better than we can do on multiple aspects. But I'm putting that aside for a second, whether that's going to happen in 2 years, 3 years, or 10 years. And that's kind of like the range that the experts are talking about. The specific tasks that we need in business, it already does better than we do. So I don't care when it will be able to do everything better than us. I care about, okay, can I have five of these doing five major things in my business way better than any employee for practically free? The answer is yes today. So this is how I look at these things. But do you want to dive in?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's jump into
Let's
it.
dive in. So the first law of changing the way you think about how to implement AI in your business is stop thinking efficiency and start thinking outcome. And I know it sounds weird. Like, what do you mean? Like, when we plan, we always plan, you know, with the end in mind, and we're trying to adapt to that and build steps. But the reality is, as business people, we are trained, and especially people who've been in managerial positions for a while, we're trained to think of the process. So I'm a very visual person. I literally think in flow charts. But okay, the flow chart of the process and everything we do in business is a process. Whether we ever mapped it or not is a different thing, but it's a process. This person does this thing using that tool, then it goes to this person. They have to do this with this software, and then it goes to that person. And that's how business things happen, whether it's writing proposals, reviewing client status, checking out prospects, delivering software, like whatever the case may be, there's all these steps in the process. And as managers, what we look for and look for our teams is to find small efficiencies in different steps of the process. So let's take customer service as an example. How does customer service work? Well, we get a customer service call, and it comes either in the form of an email or a form of a ticket or a form of a call or a chat, like whatever the input is. So that's step one. That initiates the process. Step two is we need to evaluate what that thing is and the severity of it and how important this client is to us. These are usually kind of like the vectors you're looking at. Is this extreme? Is this an important client? And what category does it fall into within the services or product that we provide? And then we need to assign it to somebody to resolve. And then there's an iteration with that person. They may need some additional information. And then eventually it gets resolved and we have hopefully a happier customer. But the goal is a resolution and a happy customer. But the way we treat it as business owners and leaders is to look for incremental improvement in each and every one of those steps. How do I add the customer service chat button in a more clear place on the website so more people can find us easier and chat with us? How do I improve the calls queue on the phone so I can take more calls each hour with the same amount of people that I have today? These are the things we're looking for because this is the only way we train to think. Now, it's awesome, right? It does help. Like if you get a 5% incremental improvement in one of those steps, especially if that's your bottleneck. And again, that's the other thing. We're trained to think in bottlenecks. And we'll get to that in one of the future other four concepts. But if you solve the bottleneck, now you have a much higher throughput for everything else, right? So there's a reason why we think this way. But the reality is, with AI today, in many cases, you can jump straight to the outcome, or at least a few steps in the process, completely circumventing them. So instead of looking for an AI tool to get you a 10% improvement on how to better distribute the customer service tickets, you can have an AI customer service machine that can take calls, that can prioritize, that can solve the problems, and that can communicate with the customer 24/7 in any language on any platform they want, whether it's voice or email or chat or all of the above. And over time, as it gets integrated to the systems that we have in our company, whether it's an ERP or a CRM or a email marketing automation, so like whatever field you're in, it will be able to actually solve the problem. And so you're going from a situation of I'm looking for these small incremental fixes or steps to I can have happy customers almost immediately. And if you think about, I love customer service examples because as a customer, especially of large corporations in the US, it's a catastrophe. Like if you're ever trying to get help from any large organization in the US, it's a complete nightmare. And the reality is, in the very near future, and when I say very near future, I don't mean tomorrow, but in the next 2 to 3 years, you'll be able to solve problems in the minute you communicate with the system because that's the way it's going to work for probably 90% of the problems.
Yeah, and just to like pause there for the audience. This is huge right here. This is the whole idea of breaking out of the matrix. And you hear a lot of the times today with Gen AI, it is very much efficiency based. We'll do more with less. But I love your point you mentioned. It's like, do we change the button here on the website? What if there is no website? What if that's not the modality you're even interacting in? That's like where it's reprogramming your brain in a sense with what do you want to achieve? And you got to throw all the other stuff out the window. And I want to ask you this. Like, I feel like this gets to the point where you compare big, large legacy enterprise with legacy process people technology versus new startup. I mean, maybe it's an obvious answer, but who's poised to really take advantage of this new technology? It's probably those starting fresh in a sense.
I think there's actually a slide that's going to touch on that. We'll get to that. So one of the four concepts is going to touch on somewhat of what you're
Nice.
saying.
I'm
But
getting
in
ahead of the game.
general, I think we're about to view the biggest valuation change in history of valuations because of what you said. And there are several reasons for that. One is what you said, right? So smaller startups can just adapt to these capabilities and technology much faster. And continually adapt because, like I said, this thing changes on a daily basis. There's new, really incredible capabilities that are coming out regularly. Large enterprises will never be able to adapt on that speed. Smaller companies might. And so, if they figure out how to continuously evolve as this technology evolves, they can do basically, they can create significantly more value faster and faster. When all the giant companies will not be able to catch up, which means they'll be able to provide similar or better services for a lot less because they have significantly less overhead. So I definitely see a huge shift moving away from large corporations to smaller companies in whatever niche components of what the big company provides.
Yeah, I mean, we're potentially seeing whole changes in business models to an extent. SaaS, could be a thing of the past potentially. There may be a new, better way of doing it down the road.
Yeah, going back to that, by the way, connecting into this point and kind of like me speculating. So today we have an app store, right? And now we have a GPT store as well. But we also have these coder copilots, right? You can go in not knowing how to write code at all, like me, and create code, which I don't create anything sophisticated, but I started dabbling with creating different automations that use code, with creating API connections and schemas that use code, with creating plugins and extensions to Google Sheets that use code. And I don't write the code. ChatGPT writes the code for me. And I test it. And if it doesn't work, I tell it what doesn't work and it fixes it for me and I try again. So run this a few years forward, especially for smaller apps. Usually, think about the bigger apps we use. Most of them do a million things, but we need two things for real. Like we pay for the rest of it, but we actually needed to do two specific things. I think the day in which we go into a quote-unquote app store, or it will be an app creator, and I say, hey, I have this use case and I need an app to solve it, and it will literally create the app for you on the fly. And now you have an app. Now you can decide to share that app with the world or not, doesn't matter, but that app is going to solve your very specific niche problem with this API, with these kind of clients, for that kind of scenario, with these amount of users. And it will create it for you right there and then. And I think that day is not too far into the future, going back to thinking of what the outcome that I need and changing our mindset from thinking, oh, so which software do I need? What kind of integrations I have to create? How many people in what positions do I need in order to create those integrations? No, here's the outcome, create it for me. Okay, it's ready. Let's start using it.
Yeah, it reminds me a bit, and I promise we're going to get to the next one in just a minute, but so many good points around this. But at Hatchworks, we've defined our generative-driven development methodology. And if you remember, I'm sure you do, extreme programming, you had the concept of paired programming, right? You'd literally be two engineers sitting at a keyboard working together, and it was much more efficient in terms of what you were trying to do and less rework and all those kind of things. How we're thinking about it now is this AI agent, whether it's ChatGPT, a custom LLM, or whatever it may be, that is your buddy in a sense working with you. And then you progress down the road. What if it's actual AI agents partnering with other AI agents, and it just starts to get into this crazy network effect down the road? But that's how we're starting to think about it and apply it at Hatchworks in a sense.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm with you 100%. And I'm talking to, you know, some of my clients are software companies, and I also have a software company myself as another business. And over there, I have a software company. So using these co-pilots to develop snippets of code became standard for companies to figure it out. And it just saves so much time and so much less errors in those small snippets. But those small snippets would become bigger snippets, and these will become whole components that you'll be able to just let it develop.
All right, let's hit the next one, unless there's
let's
any
hit
other
the next one.
Points on this
so
one.
The
let's
next one is called from profession to skills. And so what do I mean by that? And what I mean by that is, if you go back to the 17th century, there was a profession called computer. So people,
really?
If people had business cards back then, which I'm not sure they did, but if people had business cards, some business cards would have computer on their business card. Now, nobody has a computer on their business card today. When I was a kid, our next door neighbor was a typist because she could type on a typing machine. Yeah. Now, how many typists do you know today? Well, very few, because we all need to know how to type. It's a
everybody
skill.
Does it now. Yeah. Yeah.
Now everybody's a typist. And there's a lot of examples like that. And I think what AI is doing, it's turning a lot of professions into skills. Now, when I say that, people are like, no. You still cannot design like a graphic designer who has experience and took it in university. I'm like, not yet. I'm getting pretty freaking close.
Yeah.
And in
wait,
a year,
just for the audience that can't see, there's a Midjourney. I'm assuming this is some type of AI generated image.
It is.
And it looks real. It is insane. Our designers starting to play with this stuff. And it's crazy what you can do in the tool, but then if you connect it with Photoshop, like, it's game over. It's insane what you can do now.
So if we go back to what you just said, graphic designers, computer coders, different kinds of administrators, paralegals, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many things that used to be a profession. You had to go to the university, study for 4 years or 6 years, go and work for a company, get some, you know, scars on your hand to show that you know what you're doing. And now you can have that skill if you learn how to use these AI tools and get to extremely impressive outcome. And some people say, well, you know, you're going back to your slide, and I appreciate the fact you like it. It's one of my favorite slides ever that I've created. And I've created that image. And yes, it took me this particular image probably half an hour to create. But if I had to send this to a professional agency to create, it would have taken a few weeks, would have cost me a lot of money, and would have spent a lot of time of going back and forth with different iterations of this. So here the iteration took me 2 or 3 minutes, each one on Midjourney, until I got exactly the outcome that I wanted. And the slide looks amazing. I'm not saying this to pat myself on the shoulder. I'm saying that because the ability to create amazing graphics, great research, fantastic summaries, great data analysis, so data scientist kind of stuff, is now at the fingertips of any person who's willing to invest not too much time in learning how to use AI tools.
Yeah.
So stuff that used to be professions is very quickly turning into skills.
You look at even prompt engineering. That's the latest profession now. That's gonna go. That's like the typist, right? That'll just be standard thing. But what I gotta ask you this though, like, what happens in this new world where we're not tied to a profession? And if you're gonna get into this, let me know. But like, you got me thinking now. I haven't actually thought about it in this way. What does that new world look like? And who actually gets ahead based on this like paradigm shift in a sense?
So I'm going to address it on two very different aspects. And again, I don't know, right?
Yeah,
I'm
this is all
speculating
pontificating, right? Yeah.
based on my own thoughts and a lot of stuff that I read and hear and follow. The first aspect is the professional side. What does that mean for businesses right now, right? Because this is your audience wants to know, okay, what do I do with this information? What you do with this information affects how you hire and affects how you train the people in your organization, right? You must. I don't care what your company does. You must have people who understand how this whole AI game is played, how these tools work, what they're capable of doing, and how to implement them in a business framework. So this is one, and that means you need to hire consultants, usually as step one. So that's why I have a consultancy, right? Because most businesses do not know how to do
That's
that.
right.
Over time, you will either train people internally or hire external people to hold that role. And then in the longer time, everybody will just know, just like everybody knows how to use Microsoft Office, right? Like it will be, yeah, okay, of course we use AI because this is a part of everything we do on the day-to-day. But that's kind of like the process. So this is how you hire, who you hire, what skills they need to have, what experience you want them to have with AI tools, and how you train your existing staff on how these tools work to change, like you said, that mind shift of how you're doing things today versus how you want to do things next month, if you want to, is one aspect. But the bigger aspect, which is really troubling, and I don't have an answer for, I'm just a big believer in humanity and that we'll figure it out, is beyond profession, it's purpose. Right? Like if AI can do all the stuff I need to do, and because it's stuff I need to do, I aspire to do it, right? People aspire to do things that they want to do that they know that are doable. I want to provide for my family. I want to be able to go hiking at least once a month. I want to take a trip to Paris. I want to learn how to play bass, right? It doesn't matter. You aspire to do something. But what if that aspiration is already, it's already done? Like there's no point in doing it because it's already done. So what becomes our purpose in life? And I don't have a good answer to that. Like I said, we'll have to figure it out, probably not in the next 2 years, but our kids will definitely have to figure it out because all the things that we need to do today are going to be very, very different by the time they grow up and have to have a profession.
Yeah, I could see it as the dystopian future. What's the movie WALL-E, where the people are just mindlessly moving around? Or is it something to your point, do we get to things that are of true deeper purpose that maybe we're not even, you kind of think of the Maslow hierarchy of needs. Maybe there's other stuff we can focus in on. That's really, you got me thinking now
Yeah, it's
about
like I
this
said,
shifts things.
I don't have an answer. There's probably smarter people than me that don't have an answer. I think time will tell, but we're definitely will see humans evolving because everything we know as the day-to-day is going to change. Okay, let's touch on the next topic. And we touched a little bit or around it so far. And this is there's two ways to win in the AI era. One, and this is those of you who can see the graphics, it's a kind of like a machine boxer on the right side that has a lot of data in his brain. And that's proprietary data. So one way to win with AI is proprietary data. Companies who have a lot of proprietary data can train models on that data and nobody else can because they're the only ones who have that data. So for that specific niche, for that specific sector, for that specific industry, they have an advantage that nobody else can ever close because they have access to data nobody else has. Going back to your question about large enterprises versus small startups, This is where the large enterprises have a benefit that the small startups don't. They have access, assuming they've done everything right so far, but we've lived in the data era long enough that most large companies have very well data storages. Sometimes it's a mess and it needs to be cleaned up, and it's a huge process to clean it up, but they have the data. And so one way to win is to train models that only you have access to, or that you can sell as a service. It doesn't matter. You're still the only one who can sell that service. And so this is one way to win. The other way to win, and that's the boxer on the left, he's like a fighting machine, right? He's fully optimized to be a boxer, and that's optimization. So if you learn how to use AI tools to do every single process in your company faster, better, cheaper than anybody else in your competition, industry, niche, etc., you're going to win. And there was the old joke, faster, better, cheaper, pick two kind of thing
Pick
when it
two,
came to project management. That's not the case anymore. You can actually do better work faster and cheaper using AI across almost everything in the business. So if you learn how to optimize processes in your business, even if you are a commodity and you don't have anything special as far as data to train models that nobody else can, you still win against your competition. Now, obviously, if you have both, then you're in the best scenario. So if you have a lot of proprietary data and you can optimize your processes, then you're winning on both ends of that equation.
Yeah, it's that unlock to the iron triangle like you mentioned. But just to like stop here for the audience, we can't underscore the impact of the especially the proprietary data if you are a large enterprise. This gets back to the foundations of strategy, of differentiation, of building a moat. This is how you build a moat, right? You got to be able to adapt quickly to do that. You see a lot of there's a new tool, hundreds of new tools every day coming out, and a lot of them are just kind of thin wrappers on top of ChatGPT. Once ChatGPT does a new release, it wipes out half of those, right? Because they don't have defensibility. This is how you create defensibility in the future. There's the old saying of data is the new oil. It's never been more true than right now, in a sense.
No, absolutely. And the beauty of this is even smaller companies that has done things right still have a lot of data.
Oh,
Like,
yeah.
think about a 10-year-old company. Think about how many, and depending on which industry you're in, whatever, how many proposals you've written, right? That's your proprietary data. You know how many you won, you know how many you lost, you know what you responded to if you have the actual RFPs or whatever you wrote the proposal for. So you can start training models on that. Think about how many emails with clients and prospects you have. Now, is that unique to you? Well, maybe not exactly, but if you do that before your competition does on training models on how to write better proposals, you're already ahead.
Yeah, I think the open question is, I'd be curious your take here. What if you start using LLMs and Gen AI to generate data in a sense, and it may be dummy data or maybe not. What if you're leveraging that to create this differentiated data? I don't know, that could be interesting down the road. And is it truly valuable if it's just being generated from an LLM to do something? I don't know, but
So the research is showing yes, right? So when you look at the people who train models, some of what they use is what they call synthetic data. And synthetic data is data that is generated by the AI itself,
exactly,
and sometimes a different model. But even in business, it's extremely valuable. And I'll give you an example. Let's say you want to create a survey of all your clients and that are using your software. Let's say you're a SaaS company and you want to know how they're going to respond. Figuring out which questions to develop and what the answers might be a hit or miss, or you hire a consultant who specializes in that who's going to take you a lot of money. Or you go to the LLM and you describe your software, you give it access to your website, you let it understand what it does, and said, I want to develop a survey. Help me write the survey. And then it writes the survey. I'm like, okay, now you are 50 types of clients, and these are the kind of clients we have. Now I want you to answer the survey. And it will answer the survey. Now you get an idea what might the answers be, and you can keep on improving the survey until you're happy with it. So literally every single person in the world can play this synthetic data game today just as a brainstorming process to get to a better outcome of the thing you're trying to do, whether it's in design or customer service review or HR and that, like whatever aspect of the business, you can play the game within ChatGPT or any other model to progress and get to a much better point than you started with.
Yeah, that's a crazy example. The survey one, it's got me thinking of other ones as well, but no, that's very interesting. Getting into the whole data piece, and that's what we're seeing at Hatchworks too, is that's the biggest piece right now. It's actually like the data engineering, getting it structured properly. And now you could even start to use Gen AI and LLMs to do some of that as well, which is becoming really interesting in terms of, you know, cleaning up, formatting, all that kind of stuff.
Yep. Awesome.
All right.
Next.
Let's hit number, where are we on? Number three?
We are on number two, I think.
Number two, there we go.
Now we're going to three.
Three, here we go.
So AI enables infinite scalability. That's number three. Like, okay, there's no such thing as infinite scalability. And I agree. There's no such thing as infinite scalability, but we're getting pretty freaking close. We're getting to the point where it's so far beyond the level of stuff we can do today that it's almost infinite. And let's take an example from the marketing, right? So until last year, one of the biggest things in the world was content marketing, outbound marketing, call it whatever you want to call it. I want to create blogs that are optimized for SEO. The more I create them, if I create them properly, according to the right process, with the right SEO keywords and so on, I will be able to rank higher on Google, and hence I'll be able to get more clients. Your bottlenecks were A, coming up with ideas for new blogs, B, having the people to write the blogs, format the blogs, deploy the blogs, etc. So you could write five blogs a week, right? Or if you're a bigger company, 30. Now, every Joe Schmo can write 100 blog posts a day. Some of them are going to be shit, but if you know what you're doing, you can write a machine that will actually do proper keyword research using AI, that will actually create the right categories you want to write about based on SEO strategy, that will actually then refine the subcategories, will define the topics you want to write about, will write the articles, will review the articles based on best practices to make sure that they have the right SEO things. They will fix it and it will deploy it. So you can deploy. Now, let's say you still want one human to actually review every single one before it goes live, which is not necessarily the case because I'm not sure it will be better than a well-trained AI that does the same thing. But let's say you do. So they can probably review, let's say, 30 articles a day. So you went from five articles a week to 30 articles a day with the same amount of investment. That's infinite scalability. But then you have the next bottleneck, right? Okay, now I have a lot of client requests that are coming in through our form on our website because we have a better SEO. So how many people can I review? Because it's all open text. We're asking people what they're looking for. Well, guess what? AI can review all of those, and they can review an endless number of them in a single day. Like, it doesn't matter how many people fill out the form, it will know how to put them in the right buckets, and it will know who to send this to, and it will know how to respond. So you can go bottleneck by bottleneck by bottleneck in your business, figure out the AI solution, and get to, again, maybe not infinite scalability, but an order or two order of magnitudes better than you're doing right now. And as you solve bottlenecks, the throughput of the business is becoming bigger.
Yeah. And just for the audience, this is not a theoretical concept. There are companies today that I've seen execute on this, and they're getting, you know, millions of hits, and they're unseating major brands in their category. So this is not just theory or an idea. People are executing on this actual particular use case you mentioned today. And this is just the tipping point. This is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of what you can start to do with this concept that you're talking about here, infinite scalability.
Now, going back to the bigger picture, what that does to our universe or our business world, SEO as we know it will cease to exist. Search as we know it will be very, very different. For two main reasons. One, because we are going back to my very first point, we want the outcome. Like people don't want to go through the steps. They want the outcome. Don't give me search. Search is so like, 1995. I don't want to search. I want the answer. I want the outcome. I don't want to. I'll give you another example of going to the outcome that I love. I create a lot of videos for my business and for stuff that I do. Creating videos used to be you need cameras, you need lighting, you need a microphone, you need a crew, you need to edit. And now you go to Runway and you create a video or to HeyGen or
Hey, Jen,
to Synthesia or doesn't matter, any one of those. You can create the video without the camera, without the lighting, without the people, without the editing, without any of that. So you go straight to the outcome. So if you think about all of this together, the way we find content and find answers becomes very different because we want the outcome. I don't want to search. I want to know. And it's a very different concept, and the tools are going to go through that. The problem with that is that we're creating a huge amount of junk content that is very quickly taking over the good, real content that we had before. And how the hell will we know to tell the difference? I don't think anybody knows, but this is just another food for thought.
Yeah, and one tangent here too. You mentioned several tools. This is one thing I see people getting caught up on. It's like, oh, I got to know the perfect tools. There's too many. It's you almost got to up level it a bit and understand the different modalities, capabilities, applications of Gen AI. Go play with the tools 100%. But once you know it's capable of this, that's the unlock versus like, you mentioned HeyGen, really cool tool, but that's not, the Holy Grail. I think it's going to start to be leveraging multiple tools in tandem. And it's like you see a lot of the Midjourney plus the Runway. It's taking the image generation, then animating it. Like, I think we're going to see some form of a AI generated movie, short movie, whatever it may be in the not too distant future here.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. If you think about it, even Midjourney themselves said they're going to start creating videos. Sam Altman hinted that they're going to start creating videos. Like, I think 2024, if 2022 was the year where generated images kind of like caught the attention, 2023 was large language models. I think 2024 is going to be video and audio. And we're already seeing a very promising start of that. But I'll be really surprised if by the end of this year we cannot create really convincing videos of anything we want by flicking, a button or a finger or whatever. Just like we can create images in Midjourney today that we cannot tell the difference between them and real images, the same thing will be with video probably this year.
Yeah, and then you get into a whole ethical debate and how do you know what's real or fake? And we don't have enough time to go down that rabbit hole today, but those are the type of things, it's just a whole new set of benefits, but also problems that you got to consider as you go through this.
Absolutely. So, quick recap, right? Stop thinking. First one was stop thinking efficiency, start thinking of the outcome. Rule number two was from profession to skill. How do you skill people to do things that used to be professions? Number three was how to win either proprietary data or optimizational processes with AI. And number four was infinite scalability on multiple aspects and basically solving bottlenecks you have in the business. If you can do at least some of these things in your business, you're going to take it very, very fast forward and way faster than your competition, which in the short run, in 3 years, everybody will figure this out.
Yeah, no,
In the
this is
next
great.
three months, whoever's going to do it is going to win big time.
That's right. That's right. One of the best episodes we've had to date. I feel like we need to go do a separate episode on each one of these individually, but awesome overview. Isar, where can people find you, either your company or you yourself, if they want to learn more about what you do? And by the way, Isar puts out a ton of awesome content out there, so he's definitely worth a follow.
Thank you. So, if you want the podcast, as you mentioned in the beginning, it's called Leveraging AI. And we talk a lot about very tactical, practical things that business people who are not techies can do with AI in their business. So a lot of the stuff we talked about today, a lot of hands-on how-to across multiple use cases. And we do this with literally the smartest people on each and every one of those topics that I can find. So leveraging AI is the podcast. Number two, if you want just to consume the other content that I produce, just follow me on LinkedIn. That's the best place. My name is Isar Meitis. It's spelled Isarmeitis. It's a really mouthful of name that nobody can pronounce, but I'm the only Isar Meitis on LinkedIn. So
That's the
there's a
benefit. There you go.
benefit to having to spell and pronounce my name every single time. So if you found Isar Meitis on LinkedIn, you found me. If you want the company is called Multiply, and it's spelled with an AI in the end. So it's Multiply. So it's multiply.ai. And what we provide is we provide educational services. So we teach courses either for the open public or for companies. We do consulting and we help businesses develop AI-infused software that can help their operations. So these are the three categories of things that we do. I think that's enough for one day. By the way, if you're listening to this podcast versus watching it somehow, pull up your phone right now and give Matt a 5-star review for the podcast and write something nice. It's not easy to do this thing week in, week out. So that's the way to say thank you and to help Matt put out more amazing episodes. So do that right now, and I'm sure he'll be grateful.
Now, I appreciate the plug there from a fellow podcaster. I promise I did not pay Isar to say that. But thanks for being on the show, Isar.
Thank you. This was awesome. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Built Right. If you enjoyed the show, give us a follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to leave us a review. For more info on Built Right, visit us at hatchworksbuiltright.com. Do you already have a GenAI use case in mind for your business, but don't know where to get started? Hatchworks GenAI Accelerator is exactly what you need. We guide you from ideation to a tangible prototype. Our approach provides a low-risk, high-value pathway for you to validate and test GenAI technology on a small scale before committing to full production. We take you through technology and LLM selection, perform data preparation, and then build the actual prototype. And then we do testing and model fine-tuning of your prototype. The best part is we get you to this prototype in just 2 to 8 weeks based on the scope of your use case. Check out the link in the show notes or visit hatchworks.com to get started today.